Communications disruption can mean only one thing: invasion.
You must contact me.
Negotiation? We've lost all communication.
Hello, racing fans, and welcome to a super speedy edition of CO Bibbles Babble Bubble, your one pit stop shop for all things Star Wars prequels. This is an awesome episode we got today that was inspired by a wonderful sport, but before we get to that, I want to introduce the special guest host we have here on the show, Mr. Nikki Kumar from the Imperial Senate Podcast. Hello, Nikki. How goes it?
Hey, man. How's it? It's going good.
It's going good.
Just ready to talk about my favorite thing, racers.
Racers, yes. This is going to be super zoomy. Add the sound effects. Add the Watto singing the cantina song.
Yo!
We're going to be talking about pod racers in the Star Wars realm, F1 racing in the real world realm, and we're going to mishmash them together to some high-octane fun. But before we get into that, given that this is a prequels appreciation podcast, we got to talk about the most important prequels-related thing to happen, and that, of course, is the most recent episode of The Clone Wars on Disney+, which, wowee, I think everyone is pretty much at a loss of words for how fantastic that episode was. Nikki, I know you've probably talked your gobble off on this one and all sorts of things, but what would you say are your three favorite sort of things from the most recent episode of The Clone Wars? If you haven't seen it yet, folks, just fast forward a little bit or pause and watch the show. It's not that long. So, Nikki, what are your three favorite things from the episode? They're nice little shout-outs to the prequels.
All right. My three favorite things in the episode are basically the beginning, and within Star Wars there's a lot of different aesthetics, right? And people like different things about each story, yada yada. That's what makes it fun. But for me, the beginning with Obi-Wan and his troops, and then Anakin on the bridge with his troops, that is my perfect Star Wars aesthetic. And the way it sort of also informs upon their relationship as we see Revenge of the Sith starting and sort of the banter they have there. You really see that in full flow here. And it's one of those things like when you're watching Star Wars, certainly like a new Star Wars, something for the first time, there's a moment where something clicks and the special sauce was perfect. And you're like, yes, I'm watching Star Wars right now. And for me, it's when Anakin pulled that tactical droid off the thing, voiced by Donald Faison, which was awesome. And then he chopped him up, and then the rocket troopers came out from beneath. And I was like, this is perfect. So that was the first one. Second one. Second one, I'm going to say, was the sort of landing sequence on Mandalore. I thought that was one of like the coolest sort of like battle combat sort of show, like sequences they've done in the show. It actually took me back to a very like sort of specific feeling I had with something that wasn't Star Wars, and that was the Battle of Winterfell. Mm. Because there's a moment when the Mandalorians like jetpack out of the Republic gunships, and they're sort of like flying in, and that reminded me of like the Dothraki charge. And then there's a part where the guy or one of the Mandalorians is like sort of scanning the clouds as like he's like waiting for something to happen, and then all of a sudden the Mandalorians like come flying out of the clouds, and then it's like everything's hitting the wall. So like that was, I don't know. It sort of like just, it did a good job of like building that tension. I don't know if you also sort of felt that in the way that that all sort of kicked off. And I don't know, it felt like really, it was like a very specific feeling that I hadn't had since that Winterfell battle. And that even got compounded by, I guess I'll say, my third favorite part of the episode is when Ahsoka takes the troopers into the sewers. And there's a very specific, and or it's also kind of creepy, which also reminded me of Battle of Winterfell when like Arya's trying to sneak through the hallways with like the zombies around. So yeah, I think those are my favorite parts. And there's specifically a shot where it starts with, I think her name's Rook, and she's like looking down the hallway at the clones in Ahsoka. And then she turns around and it sort of tracks her as she goes through her like bad Mandos, and they're all just sort of like waiting. And then she like gets to the other side of the hallway. I loved that. And the ambush and everything. It was just a stellar episode. It's really hard to pick three things.
Mm-hmm. Oh no. Yes. It, what you say about the second point about having the sort of that, what I almost call it the canon sequence, not that there was any canons as an active focus, but it was kind of the idea the fleet sort of just shot off everyone at once to say, just get to the city. Mm-hmm. And it was just this total charge. And comparing it to the Dothraki, I think that's a good comparison there, because we haven't seen sort of just a hopeless charge like that to that scale in Star Wars for a while. I mean, with all due respect to, you know, the Battle of Crait, of course, where you see the handful of resistance fighters just trying to delay. But in terms of guns blazing, everybody just go and, you know, have it to your all. It's just the scale of it. And of course, you know, you see large space battles and The Rise of Skywalker at the end of that film there, of course, but where you get to see the individual troops effectively. Mm-hmm. And it's the scene where the ship, or towards the end of that, when the one gunship is crashing and Ahsoka saves the pilot, the way they're able to capture that guy's fear without showing a facial expression or even having any sort of dialogue going on. But it just shows the power of the animators to capture this sort of panicked body language. And then the calmness, the moment she brings out her lightsabers, the dude like stops quivering immediately and just calmly accepts this is going to be fine. And that really builds up to the whole trust thing they have showing there. And, you know, one thing that we see throughout the entire Clone Wars series is the buildup trust between the clones and the Jedi, which makes Order 66 all the more painful, especially since we're going to likely get it again. Here in the show, so that's just
repeated stabs.
It's horrible, and the fact that they even took the images of, you know, prior to Plo Koon's death, and then of course Bela Secura herself, you know, seeing that transposed in Clone Wars 3D is like, here it's coming, and having the red font.
Oh, we're here.
You know, it's one thing that I was kind of surprised by in terms of the narrative of it was how quickly they smashed into Revenge of the Sith. I thought Ahsoka and Anakin and Obi-Wan were going to have a little bit of time on Mandalore together, or at least on the way there. But the fact that it was just bounce. And then, and this may be kind of embarrassing, but I didn't realize the 501st was that big. Mm-hmm. When, you know, Anakin says, oh, we'll promote Rex, which was a great moment, well deserved. He said, I'll give you half of the 501st. And then you see what constitutes half, and then you realize, well, then that other half is there at, you know, the Jedi Temple. So, like, I don't know, maybe I've missed a point where we see just how massive these groups are, but that kind of took me for a surprise. I don't know, maybe I'm wrong here.
Yeah. No, I feel like if there were times in the show where they, like, try to show the scale of one of these, like, divisions, maybe one of them is like the Kamino arc when they are like unloading off the ship and it's just these like giant stacks of soldiers like walking down the ramp. Mm-hmm. Maybe in Umbara there are like large shots of the 501st. But obviously in a show like this, we will only sort of look at a handful of them at a time.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, I think I always just assumed that like the the Legion numbers or whatever are just kind of what they need to be at any given moment. And we can assume they're really big because it's like, because they're like battalions and whatnot. But yeah, it's interesting that he gave her so many. Yeah.
Yeah. I was half expecting it to just be the clones who were in the room with the customized helmets. And yeah. I thought, oh, you know, I wonder if this is a disappointment to Bo-Katan because it's basically like a strike, you know, a strike force going on there. But no, then you see it's what, three cruisers.
On all the tanks.
All the tanks. It's like, good God.
I guess that's what, because again, it's like, these are the moves that, you know, for so long watching the Clone Wars were like, oh, well, where's Rex in Revenge of the Sith? And, you know, where's all this, yada, yada. And I think it's sort of, these are the moves they're showing that it's almost like, yeah, Anakin is more now attached onto Obi-Wan's group as opposed to like leading his own because they're limited, right? And then the 501st, you know, I guess half of them are now would be at the Jedi Temple, right? So yeah, no, it's just interesting now to finally see all these pieces coming together when we've always had these questions about like, where are people going to be, like why, you know, what's the explanation as to why Anakin wouldn't bring up Captain Rex and, you know, Revenge of the Sith, like an in-universe reason. And, yeah, no, it's just insane. And, no, yeah, like when you said the thing about, being surprised at, just how soon all that happened. And I was kind of the same. We knew it was coming, but I was kind of the same. Like as soon as that klaxon, the alarm started going off, I was like, no, I'm not ready. I'm not ready, guys. You can't do this to me now. Because yeah, it's like we are in the movie timeline now. Mm-hmm. It's nuts. And yeah, there's so many little moments. One thing I would also want to mention about the first thing, the like opening part, I really loved when Rex was like underneath the bridge and he's like, "Okay, guys, it'll just be a little longer." And then one of the troopers is like, "Okay." I'm just like, "Man, more of this crap we got to deal with for crazy old Skywalker." Mm-hmm. But yeah, it's that episode just is, it was mind blowing. I don't know anybody who can say like wasn't what I wanted.
Right, no,
like,
I mean
I don't it, yeah, it's just it.
Better than any other episode of the Clone Wars at all, I think it ties into the prequels. Because, you know, the Clone Wars doesn't provide us that snuggle up episode to Attack of the Clones ever, you know? I forget if you go to the very first, like what, Cat and Mouse chronologically would be the first episode of the Clone Wars,
right?
And I think that's at least a year and a half or something removed from the Battle of Geonosis, the very first one. And so it's nice to see the show snuggle up close to the films,
right?
And not just take place in a vacuum. I mean, of course, there's the same characters and the same war going on, but that little hook and sinker and bringing it in, and
yeah, it was like one thing with the 2D Clone Wars where it started with Anakin as a Padawan, which like made it feel like, oh, this is like the week after Attack of the Clones, and that's something the new Clone Wars never did. So that it's really cool to see it now, yeah, get right up close to a movie.
And the 2D one ended with the capture of Palpatine. So
right.
It's nice.
That's like the last thing.
Yeah, that they're providing that closure and then some through the movie. Anyhow, you know, we could talk about this episode for many, many hours. And if listeners, if you're a fan of Nicky's analysis here and some of his contributions, you should listen to the what episode will it be on the Imperial Senate podcast?
It will be episode 71.
Okay.
Yeah, it should. I don't know when it'll drop, but it'll drop sometime in the next few days.
So keep your ears and eyes open for episode 71 to listen to Nikki, Claire, and Charlie. Was it all three of you?
It sure was. All
right, to hear the Holy Trinity themselves talk about the Clone Wars episode. But now we're going to jump over to kind of the goofy comparisons that drive the babble bubble forward, and we're going to talk about what we originally promised, and that's right, that's racing. So, Nikki, how about you? This sort of is the birth child of an idea that you had. So, why don't you share what is the line of thinking that brought you to pod racing and F1 and having an episode about it?
Well, I think the parallels are evident, right? Like, you talk about the pod racing scene of Phantom Menace, and it's like, I think the first sort of parallel is always Ben-Hur and the great chariot race in that movie, and that's sort of like the foundation of why that scene exists, or that why that stuff exists as it does in The Phantom Menace. But when you start looking into like a lot of the technology and George Lucas's hobbies and whatnot, you can see all the stuff of like this marriage between pod racing and Formula One, where it's like, you know, obviously they sampled the audio that, you know, as a pod racer is from Formula One engines. Like, I remember the first time I got to go to a Formula One weekend in great city of Austin, Texas.
Welcome.
There we go. I got to go for not the race itself, but like they do qualifying on like the Friday and Saturday. And so I think I went on a Friday, and I just remember sitting there, and as they race past, and I'm like, whoa, that's the pod racing engine. Like, that is the exact same noise. That was one of the first things I picked up on. And so, and then also, one of the times I got to go to two years it happened. I got to go down there, and I can't remember which one it was, but Steven Spielberg, Ron Howard, and George Lucas were there the same day. So it's obvious Formula One's obviously a hobby for George Lucas as well, and I think, and just this whole racing aesthetic is, it's so like ingrained in pod racing. And also I think another thing that sort of brought this upon is the Netflix documentary series Formula One Drive to Survive.
What a great name.
I know, right? And it's a really great documentary, like the way it's all structured and the detail put into it. And you realize that all the racers in real life are just as colorful as these pod racer characters, right? Like they're all messy bitches who live for drama, and it's an amazing thing. And I think just sort of seeing how everyone's got these very unique personalities, and it just reminded me of all our beloved pod racers. And so we just decided to sort of have some fun with that and see where the conversation goes figuring out all these different sort of things you can do with these two racing universes.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think the first place to start is with the most recent thing you mentioned, which is the colorful personalities. In watching Drive to Survive, or if you're just a fan of F1 and you're choosing to follow it, and in the characters, you can start to draw parallels between certain drivers and kind of their Star Wars pod racing equivalent. Mm-hmm. So what we're going to go through here is some of the drivers, and we're going to pick who their pod racer is. Or actually, should we do the reverse where we pick a pod racer and say who their driver is? We could even alternate between the two. We'll see what works, you know, all on the fly.
Yeah.
I actually like the second one a bit better. So I think, you know, what better to start with little Annie himself, Anakin Skywalker. You know, I'm curious, who is your Anakin Skywalker of F1? Now we're going to look at the 2019 roster of drivers, more or less, because the 2020 season has obviously been postponed, if not canceled altogether, because certain events, because of these crazy and zany time we're living in right now. But thankfully, history gave us a great season last year, and you can look a little bit to seasons beforehand to try to paint the personalities of them. So, you know, folks, if we mention someone who has happened to have retired or somebody who kind of graduated out, we apologize, but that just happens to be where we are today. So, who's your Anakin Skywalker?
So, I think we actually had a bit of a conversation about this, and you suggested a name, and I was like, "That I think that's exactly right. We're going for Ferrari's Charles Leclerc. I don't even know how to say it.
Charles
Leclerc.
Is it Leclerc?
Is it Leclerc or Leclerc?
I like for a moment there you were Daniel Craig in Knives Out.
Charles Leclerc.
Doing donuts on the track.
But yeah, I think he is very much the Anakin Skywalker of this group. Sort of a young, he's very young, but also kind of a chosen one because he's super young. And after his first season, he was drafted into Ferrari, which is a big deal. They're obviously, I think the most successful ever. Right now, not so much. They've sort of been out of it for a little while, but they're still like a top two. But as far as like championships go, they've been second best for a while. But yeah, this guy is young. He's ferocious. He's insanely gifted. If there is a chosen one right now, a young kid chosen one in Formula One, it's him. And I think there's been a lot of talk going into 2020 about who might have like really challenged. And I think he was going to be the guy because. Also, I think in the 2019 season, he got like, I forget exactly what the official title of it is, but it's like he got the most, like pole positions or something. There's a stat somewhere where it's like not necessarily winning all the races, but like qualifying the highest.
Yeah, I'm looking at the number right now of the 21 Grand Prix last season. He got the pole position 7 times. That's mm-hmm. 1 out of every 3. That's pretty ridiculous. I mean, the next best performer in that regard would be Valtteri Bottas, who got 5. So, I mean, that's a mm-hmm. comfortable discrepancy right there.
Right. So, yeah, I think this kid is a future champion. And I think that's sort of the key. It's like the kid part of it. But I think there's also other good options. I think Max Verstappen is also very young. Could easily have taken that sort of title as well.
He's kind of a punk, you know?
He kind of is.
So, you know, you have to take a certain degree of, you know, the personality as well. You know, one thing I like about my man Chuck Leclerc for it.
Check it.
If you had to point particular races that sort of, in my opinion, scream Anakin, I look at 3, and there was the 2 times he actually won last season, and that was in Belgium and Italy. And in those cases, he had very sort of kind of close races with Valtteri and Lewis Hamilton. And mm-hmm. those guys were the podium 2 races in a row, 2 weekends, and Charles got it twice. And then I look to the Brazil race, sort of the penultimate race, where him and Sebastian Vettel got into their sort of hate, sort of disdain for each other, just kind of reached a peak, and the two of mm-hmm. them were just constantly running into each other, very much, you know, Anakin Sebulba vibes, and they crashed out of the race. So it ended up not going the same way as the Bunta Eve Classic, but, you know, that sort of suspense going on, what's going to happen, but in this rally, they both just crashed themselves out super early on, and they had to retire. I think they still classified in the finish, but it was just kind of this big womp-womp that then let that race end kind of goofy because the two Ferrari people knocked themselves out, And then Hamilton kind of did some bad stuff. So, you know, that's when Carlos Sainz all of a sudden had himself bursted up to three. But we'll get to him to him later. This is kind of the before we transition to Sebulba, I want to say another thing I like about Leclerc as Anakin is the sense that he was born in Monaco. Mm-hmm. And if, you know, the Bunta Eve classic is considered sort of an all-time great pod race, and the Monaco Grand Prix is sort of, you know, the creme de la creme of F1. Anakin's from Tatooine. Mm-hmm. That's his hometown race. Some degree of similarity there. Maybe I'm pulling for straws, but, you know.
Well, I think you've got a good point because you also brought up the Italian race, which is on the famous track called, like, Monza. And the Italian Grand Prix is Ferrari's home race.
Ah, yes. Those are bad, too.
And Charles won that race. So that's kind of like Anakin winning the Bunta Eve, his home planet race as well.
See? Connections. So we'll go ahead and move to Sebulba. Now, this one's kind of tricky because I feel like there's three folks who it could largely be, depending what aspect of Sebulba you want. I mean, I think there's the most obvious, Sebulba always wins.
Right.
Taking that sentence,
that's some delicious fruit ready to be picked. Mm-hmm. But I think I know who I want Sebulba to be, and it's not old Lewis.
It's not. No. Yeah, I'd hate to do it. Lewis Hamilton. Mm. It just blows my mind. This guy is a 6-time champion, and he's so damn cool.
Mm-hmm.
Like, there's nothing negative I really feel about the guy at all. Other than
he's always been my favorite racer. I've been sort of like keeping track of Formula One probably since about 2010. But I was only really like sort of because it's never really been that big in the U.S. So my exposure to it was going to visit family in England, and like the summer races would always be on. And so, and of course, when you have someone as good as Lewis Hamilton, and being British, of course, like the British crowd will like pay attention to that. Mm-hmm. And so I've known him since he was racing at, he was at McLaren for a while, and then he did well there, but then he went to Mercedes, and Mercedes gave them the tools to just dominate. But yeah, it's I don't think he's Sebulba in this story.
Mm-hmm. I agree with that. So who do you have?
Mm-hmm. Sebastian Vettel.
Yep, there we go. I mean,
yeah. Which is, again, we talk about Hamilton winning all the time. Sebastian Vettel, when he raced for Red Bull, is a 4-time world champion. When I went to those races in Austin, this would have been like 2012, 2013, sometime around that. Maybe 2013 was the first time I went. It was Hamilton for McLaren, Vettel for Red Bull, and they were neck and neck all the time. So Sebastian Vettel is a killer racer. Mm-hmm. But very specifically, there's a line in the Formula One documentary that I think sells the deal. And that is when they were talking about Leclerc and Vettel having those issues, like where Vettel would just basically like screw this guy over. And one of the reporters in the documentary says, every racer has to have their inner bastard. And I was like, oh, that is Sebulba. Like this, like Vettel is a dick. Like he can, like he's a nice guy, but like
on the track,
oh my
yeah.
God, he can be a dick. Like there, even at Red Bull, there were times where he used to race with a guy called Mark Webber. And Mark Webber is like this lovable Australian. And he was like, I don't know anybody who doesn't like Mark Webber. And there was this one like this very specific time where the like radio team for Red Bull was like, hey, Sebastian, let Mark do this. And he just silence, ignores them. And he does it anyway. And they would like fight after the war. He's like, do you not hear that thing in the radio? And so, like, he does that in Ferrari as well. He did that to Leclerc in the documentary. I forget which race that was. Where they're like, hey, let this happen. Like, let him pass, you know. It's a complicated dynamic within Formula mm-hmm. One, which is something I want to mention later. But, yeah, he would just, like, ignore that. He's like, I'm going to do what's best for me. How about that? So yeah, I think he's just Savolvo like all the way through, and I think that really fits having Savolvo and Anakin on the same team.
Yeah, you point back to the that Brazil race where the two of them, you know, literally crashed themselves out of contention. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it just cuts to the team principal of Ferrari just looking, oh my God. You know, just a general frustration. Yeah. And so, no, I'm all about that. Obviously, we got the big two. They're out of the way in terms of, you know, in the story. But, of course, there's so many other great, great pod racers out there. I'm going to go to sort of my favorite out of the extras, if you will, with Gaz Gano. I'm curious.
Okay.
Yeah, who do you have for Gaz Gano?
Gaz Gano, I'm going to go with Valtteri Bottas.
I like that. That was mine too, actually. Because he ends up getting second place in the Boon to Eve, if I believe that's correct. He's the second finisher.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, Gaz Gano, I think, is considered a top five pod racer, all things considered. He's got a really cool looking, in my opinion, it's the coolest looking pod racer. That's why in the pod racer game, that's who mm-hmm. I always picked. I love that little circular thing. I love this Lego minifigure. And so, no, I think that's a natural choice right there. And I think that, well, you know, Ferrari is more of the classic. Mercedes, engineering-wise, is willing to do a couple more experimental things, and it's been working. And I feel like that's the kind of stuff Gaz Gano would be doing. I mean, and he has a good mechanic, as we talked about before the show, old Bozzy Baranta, who got promoted to being a pod racer. So this guy, for those of you who aren't into the Star Wars Episode I racer lore, Bozzy Baranta is Gaz Gano's pit crew mechanic, who shows up in the novel for the Phantom Menace, but by the time of the video game, he's a racer. And so he got promoted. And I could see Mercedes doing that, you know, being like, so, you know, we need to look up.
You came from the junior league.
You came from the junior league, yeah. And you know how to, you've kind of dicked around with cars long enough to do something cool. So, I mean, I think it makes sense. That's kind of a Mercedes culture going on there, so, you know, 1 + 1 = 2. Next off, we're going to go with the fan favorite here with good old Ben Quadraneros. Who do you got?
I have, for me, it comes down to, now, I'm a big Ben Quadraneros fan. I actually am willing to bet he's a marvelous racer. Just had a bad day at the Boon to Eve. But I'm going to go with a driver for Haas. And his name is Romain Grosjean, and he crashes all the time. like I'm pretty sure, like, most of his content in the documentary is him crashing and him just fucking up. And every one of the Haas things is just not great. And nobody hits that vibe better than Ben Quadraneros. you know that little part where he's just like pounding on his console with both fists. Like, that is a Haas move right there.
Yeah, I'm gonna pick. And, oh, go ahead.
No, go ahead.
Oh, I was gonna say I was gonna pick someone different, just to not go with an obvious choice of crashing. But I don't mean to take you from your Haas boy. So you got anything else on good old my?
No, that's about it.
Okay,
you go. Give your
so
pick.
This one is thinking a little outside the box here, but this is going on the assumption that he's good and he just had a bad day. Because, you know, we see in the Clone Wars, he's on a pod racing poster in Anakin's room. You know, you don't see a chum on a poster for the league. You got to see someone pretty decent. And so this is a headcanon I've worked up here. So I think Ben Quadraneros is actually Ben Quadraneros Jr. Try to fill some big shoes. I think he's Carlos Sainz.
Okay.
Because at times when he's frustrated, I actually see he's more Carlos Sainz's cousin.
His manager
and cousin. Because that dude's frustrated face is hilarious. I mean, he doesn't crash all the time, but the few moments when he does get retired in the season, I mean, he's decent. He got like sixth last year. But no, his cousin, Wookie, Wookie, I feel like would be saying that, you know, because he just starts swearing in Spanish. And he's kind of, he's got that goofy looking face and the glasses, and I know. So it's kind of like the two of them. I picture like Ben Quadraneros has his cousin on the side who's working, who ends up going to work at the spice mine or the spice refinery we see in the Clone Wars episode before last.
Yeah.
Another great little pod racing reference there. Mm-hmm. So that's my pick, just to not go with the obvious one.
That's a good one, yeah.
We'll get two more in this little game going on here before we move on to the next step here. So next up, we're going to go with my boy, Ebb Endicott.
Ebb Endicott.
Or Ebbe Endicott. I don't know if it's Ebb. I've always said Ebb. Ebb?
You know, I think that's a dealer's choice kind of situation.
Unlike Bozzy Baranta, you know how to say that man's name.
Exactly.
He shows up with his big old teeth.
I gotta confess, as much as I love my pod racers, I don't know enough about Ebb Endicott.
Well, so do you not know much about of F1 drivers? And there you go. I think he finishes the race. I just remember him from the menu screen from the game.
We could go with, Sergio Perez, you know. perfectly capable racer. Middle of the pack. Like Endicott, headcanon time. Huge following on his home world. but nothing overly spectacular about him.
I like that. Also, you know, Ebb Endicott, if you're familiar what he looks like, he's kind of like the monkey man who doesn't wear any clothes. I could see Sergio taking off his shirt, you know, sun's out, guns out, showing full nips.
Yeah.
Ebb Endicott has a scar across his belly. I mean, I don't know. I wouldn't put that past Sergio. But I could see, Ebb Endicott on billboards on whatever little planet he's from. We'll go ahead and get that, make sure we're being accurate. You know, there's no wrong in cheating. He's from Triffian.
Okay.
God, he's a frightening looking guy. The more I look at him, the more unsettling. God, I feel very sorry for Sergio Perez.
You know, someone's gotta be him.
Okay, it's dealer's choice. Who's a pod racer? Who you know you're dying to make the comparison.
There are three that I think I want to take a shot at.
Oh, go for it. Yeah, fire round.
Okay, Clegg Holdfast. I'm going to go with Kimi Raikkonen. Kimi Raikkonen is he's like an old dude now. He's kind of been there, done that, raced with Ferrari. But now is on, I think, Alfa Romeo. And he's sort of like a legend of the sport, but he's now old and not really doing anything.
Does he write in his spare time at all?
He might. Because
Clegg's a journalist in canon.
Well, I'm sure he's an accomplished thinker. Yeah. Clegg Holdfast just has that... You know, that way he, bows when he's introduced. He seems like an elder statesman kind of vibe. And that's how I feel with Kimi Raikkonen, kind of the older guy.
I feel like the video game does Clegg kind of dirty with his character design. Because, you see in the movie, he's got, a soft smile, kind of a sweet-looking dude. But then when you look at his, not his avatar, whatever you call it, the actual figure in the video game, he's frowning, doesn't look happy to be there. You know, poor guy. He was a sports journalist turned pod racer. So when his in canon somewhere, and I checked this because this wasn't on the Legends page, I guess in some reference guide they talk about that while his mechanic was working on his ship, he went and got the biggest scoop, old Clegg.
Oh.
So you know what? I can see the same thing for our good man. So who are your other two?
My other two are Team Topagales, as Daniel Ricciardo.
Oh, my man.
Not immune to a giant cock-up on the racetrack. But he's got this swagger to him. Team Topagales always got a huge smile on his face. So does Daniel Ricciardo. Electric smiles from the two guys. And I think that also fits into the personality of Team Toe's actual pod. Is that really cool one that looks like a donut? Like a tilted up donut?
Oh, yeah.
And I feel like that's the kind of pod a flashy, kind of eccentric guy would have. And also, there's a shot of... It's like a tracking shot of all the racers as, like, Anakin's pod is coming through. And it's when, like, the announcers are, like, saying everybody. And, I don't know, Team Topagales just looks like he's having a great time. And that reminds me of old Danny Ricciardo.
Well, you know, if there is a race ever on Team Toe's home planet, which is Moonis Mandel, you know, a native of Moonis Mandel has never won that Grand Prix. Mm-hmm. So he's going to get it one day, just like Daniel Ricciardo. It hasn't happened yet, but I have faith that it's going to, you know, maybe this was going to be the year. Who knows?
Maybe. Let's hope
we'll hope. And lastly, your last little fella, I don't mean to say little personalities, but they're kind of on the short side to fit.
Right. Last one is going to be Odie Mandrell. And I'm going to give him, because it seems really wrong to not give him a character, I'm going to give him to Lewis Hamilton.
Oh!
And it's less about the drivers and more about the team. Mm. Because Odie Mandrell, even though we don't see it in the movie precisely, his pit droid team is supposed to be like the record-setting best pit droid team. And I think that is a comment on Mercedes, because Mercedes as a manufacturer are, pun incoming, laps ahead of everybody else, like every other team. They designed the best car, even going into this 2020 season when they were doing the like original tests before the season started. People were like, holy crap, Mercedes just like redesigned this new system that's going to blow everyone else out of the water. And yeah, Mercedes is just doing things with the actual equipment that none of the teams are doing. So Odie Mandrell with the top record-setting pit droid team, I'm giving that to Lewis Hamilton.
I like it. The Mercedes. Great comparisons. You know, keys in the ignition on that were a lock and a go.
So this delightful conversation between me and Mr. Kumar was only supposed to be maybe 45 minutes, but turned into a delightful hour and a half. So I have decided to split this special episode in two parts. You just finished the first one, and wait till next week to see what exciting, super speedy, super fun, racing-themed conversation we have in store. Looking forward to catching you all around the racetrack corner.
Langt ude. Den lille fri havde nemlig sørget.